one word for it, sheer hell.
Because the snow used to drift in our house.
And there was a big crack down the one side, and the front bedroom was on the damp side.
The water had got in and corroded the metal strips, whatever they are. It was quite frightening, really, when you look round and you start thinking, is this one going to fall down next, you know?
If you've had this letter and it's addressed to you, your house is going to be demolished. People were very angry. They were all shouting together. And
the fire engines, they must have been run off the feet because they were always starting fires in it in all the houses.
And we had black dust and we were all suffering from coughs.
They never knocked the last house down because I'm still there.
It would become a challenge, really, and if they can do it, why can't we do it?
Hi, I'm Jo. I moved to Perry Common 5 years ago, and I thought it was like any other estate, but I was wrong. Speak to some of the locals, you know, those who have lived here most of their life, and you find out this place has been to hell and back. And I want to share that with you. Take you on a walk and let you hear some stories straight from the horse's mouth. It shouldn't take any more than an hour. Okay, so this community hall sits at the centre of the story and above the foundations of Witten Lodge Farm, the actual farm building, and the estate nestles snugly within the boundaries of what was the farm's dozen or so fields.
The only things in the area were farms, so it was completely open and the development of all the building did not take place until after the Great War.
That's Brian Bird. You'll hear plenty of residents' memories during the trial.
When they started to build the council estates on Perry Common, King Standing, Great Bar, they were for working class people, many of whom had moved out from the slum back to backs in the centre of Birmingham, which were truly horrible. So when they had a new council house on Perry Common, people thought it was wonderful. They'd come out, they'd got gardens, and it was green, and they'd got toilets and things like that, you know, in the house. So it was a totally different world for them.
Sounds like a dream come true, right? To start with, yeah. All was well on the first Perry Common estate built in the early 1920s. We're going to visit Phoenix Rise next, so turn left onto Witten Lodge Road, and it's the first cul-de-sac on the left. You'll find an orange plaque there, number 2, just like the one at the community hall's entrance. There's one for each stop along the trail. To Phoenix Rise. This cul-de-sac was the start of a new chapter for Perry Common. Until then, the mid-1990s, the residents had been in turmoil. They lost their houses and the estate was rife with crime. Phoenix Rise was the first step to what you see today and down to someone being in the right place at the right time.
One of the council officers was walking through an office in town and one of its people he worked with, he said, have you got any land cleared at Perry Common? And the fella said, yeah, why?
Marion Pritchard has lived in Perry Common for 30 years.
He says, well, we've got the money for a housing association to build 30 bungalows. The plans are drawn up, the money's there, everything's ready to start. And they've discovered that the ground is contaminated. He says, and unless it started by March, which was about 5 months, the money will go back to central government. So that's where you get your Phoenix Rise little bungalow estate. And those bungalows that should have been built the other side of the city.
These were the first new homes to be built in Perry Common for 70 years. Most of the first Perry Common estate had been built from a concrete and steel frame design in the 1920s by Henry Boot Limited of Sheffield.
One thing that was very weird about the boot houses was that there were five doors in the kitchen. You'd got a door to the back garden, you'd got a door to the pantry, you'd got a door to the living room, you'd got a door to the coal place. You kept your coal in a bunker in the house with a door on, and a door to the toilet.
It turns out this was the least of everyone's problems. Keep on up Witten Lodge Road and over what we call the Road to Nowhere, once a continuation of Hastings Road, which is opposite. When you reach the blue plaque, number 3, a little further on, I'll start to explain about the ashes from which the Phoenix Rise bungalows arose from. Plaque 3, The Road to Nowhere.
About 1964, something like that.
Leslie Hill had been living in his boot house for 9 years.
And they came round and they in the lofts of the rented properties, they installed black plastic across to stop the snow coming in, because the snow used to drift in our house, because ours was tiles. So the snow used to come in and you'd have a pile of snow up in the loft.
At the time, these boot houses were seen as cutting edge and cost effective. By the 1980s, Linda Hines discovered the years had taken their toll.
It wasn't until 1989 when the letters through all of the boot house letterboxes came, saying that some of them had been structurally surveyed and were found to be failing.
The water had got in and corroded the metal strips, whatever they are, that hold the concrete together, and then they were falling in.
Teresa Compton also lived on the estate.
And you were seeing them, the walls and the doors was wonky. You couldn't shut a door inside, and then you could see that the roofs was falling in. It was quite frightening, really, when you look round the estate and thinking, is this one going to fall down next, you know?
Take a look across the road. Notice anything unusual?
And the architects we were working with as Witten Lodge were quite innovative, and they said to us, why don't we build a bungalow attached to a 3-bed house? Never been done before. And the planner says, oh, I don't think that'll work. Innovative because you primarily think of older people in bungalows next to a potentially young family. Oh, we need special places for both of those. No, you don't.
It's worked a treat. We'll cross over there now and head up Hastings Road on the right. Let's stop in Mallow Rise at the fourth plaque, first on the left, to learn more about those letters. Wait! Have you checked for traffic both ways? Plaque 4, Mallow Rise.
And then we went on holiday, came back to a letter saying they were going to knock the house down.
It said, if you've had this letter and it's addressed to you, your house is going to be demolished and we're going to rehouse you. The government won't let us build any new council houses, so we're not really sure as yet where you're going to be rehoused. It will be dotted round the city where there are houses that fall empty. Come to a big meeting, which wasn't being held till the middle of December. Because there were so many people to go to the meeting, with the fact that it was 1,160 houses, it was decided to hold it at the Comp School. It was a row of people sitting behind a table on the top, all in grey suits and white shirts, and we looked at them and they looked at us, and the chair of the meeting was Stan Austin, that was the housing head of the Birmingham Council. And it really was nasty, full of shouting and waving arms, and the police were standing around the edge.
Let's keep moving down Hastings Road, keeping the school on your right. My kids go here. It's got a secret enclosed forest with big wooden animals. You can't just go in there, but they sometimes hold events during the year. Worth seeing if you can. But let's get back to the story.
And people saying, you're not touching my house.
People were very angry. They were all shouting together, and half the time you didn't get any sense out of anyone. And
you know, people were rooted into this district. People were worried, people were scared, people were afraid what was going to happen to them. They were giving up their beloved homes.
Originally, they were going to demolish all the houses. 252 brick houses that weren't affected. And they were built mainly on the corners of road junctions and practically all the way down Witten Lodge Road.
Apparently they built the brick houses on the corners of the roads because it looked better to have brick houses on the corners rather than the concrete houses.
We need to turn left here and along Wycroft Road. You'll see some of these brick-built Edwardian houses at the next junction.
Now those houses were not defective, but to give the architects and the builders and that a clean sweep, they did, the council in its wisdom decided to demolish the lot. So they all got together and had their own solicitor and that and fought it. And because there was nothing wrong with the houses, Birmingham City Council couldn't evict them, buy them compulsory. With hindsight, later on, most of them said it was the worst decision they ever made because they had years of demolition round them, lorries, builders.
Our next stop is just a little way down Broomhill Road on the right. Can you see the orange plaque with number 5 on? It's by the first house on the left, the one with the solar panel on the roof. Plaque 5, Broomhill Road. Most of the Witten Lodge Association houses have solar panels on. This one also has a fake chimney to help the older houses blend in. Mary Harvey lived on the original Broomhill Road.
We were on the end of a block of four, and there was a big crack down the one side, and the front bedroom was on the damp side. I suppose it was just the rain and everything oozing through the rough casting, and they should have been pulled down years ago, and they should have been repaired, but they were beyond being repaired. They were going to cost more to repair than they were pulling them down and rebuild.
And the first road they knocked down was Abingdon Road and Broomhill Road.
Some of the houses that had been sold under the right to buy were compulsory purchase back from the people that lived in them. They were paid 95% of the value of a house that was sound.
We can keep listening as we walk. Cross over the entrance of Briony Close and snake your way down Broomhill Road to the blue plaque at the entrance of Monkshood Mews.
And as most of them had qualified for a good discount because they'd been council tenants for a number of years, there was quite a rush of people to sell them back. And they had the money and went. This left houses around the estate that were in not such bad condition as the other ones. They were given over to a housing association who did them up and let them to anybody that wanted them that lived in a boot house that had been condemned as structurally now unsafe.
There was about 10 what they called decant houses that had been done up to a certain standard, and people could be rehoused in them until they'd build properties, and they would then be moved into new properties. And people took advantage of these decant houses, but being only 10, quite a lot of people moved off the estate and they didn't have the chance to be rehoused on the estate, because once they'd gone off the estate, they wouldn't be rehoused back on the estate.
The flats at the end of Monkshood Mews have been designed to look like houses. Plaque 6, Monkshood Mews. There was one question on the lips of everyone who stayed.
Well, what's my house going to look like? Where's it going to be? And I was saying, well, we don't know yet. We've got to design them and they've got to be built.
Finally, a little bit of order was managed, and Councillor Austin said, if you want to say in what's happening on your estate, you must band together. You must join together and form a residents' association and fight for what you want.
But the majority of the residents' members, residents' association, were women, and they just wanted to be nosy, really, I suppose, and wanted to know what was going on.
And they took us over to Stockfield Road in Acocks Green, where they'd pulled the houses down and started building, because they were boot houses over there. So we had a look at their houses and everything was very good, nice and everything else.
And what hit us was that they met us off the coach and there were no officers there. There were no men in suits. There were little old ladies telling us what they'd, and some younger, telling us what they'd done and what they'd be proud of and what they'd done wrong. It became a challenge, really, and if they can do it, why can't we do it?
Perry Common was one of three boot estates in Birmingham. Stockfield was the smallest and Tyburn the largest. Well, they've all been demolished now. Come on, let's keep going down Broomhill Road.
I first realised that I could make a difference when they bought the plans of the first houses that had been designed. And I looked at them and I said, oh, Richard, that was one of the young architects, I can see you don't clean windows. He says, why? I said, well, the one window pane here, I said, you've got 12 little windows like that. He says, yes, but that's what they were like in the original boot houses, the very original ones. I says, yes, how many corners you've got to clean? Oh, he said, when he came to the next meeting, the plans were there and the windows had got one pane. And I thought, I did that. I did that. And it was a realisation that we, even little things, we could alter.
Here, Broomhill Road turns left. If you need a drink or the toilet, you can visit the nice cafe at Perry Tree Special Care Centre. If you're happy to carry on, then let's have a stroll through Enderby Park, which is on the right just after Jonquil Close. Can you see the green plaque? That would be number 7. Wait! Take care when crossing the road. Plaque 7, Enderby Park. You're walking through what were the large back gardens of boot houses right now. Jackdaw Road, running to our left, is roughly where one row of these houses stood. Another row of boot houses were on the edge of the park to your right. These houses were in pairs, fours or sixes.
They were very proud They kept the gardens beautifully. They put flowers in the gardens, cut the privet hedges, had greenhouses, grew their own vegetables.
Even today, good gardenship, if that is a word, is encouraged by Witton Lodge.
If their garden's nice, you knock on the door. If they're not in, you put a little note through to say, your garden's beautiful.
Now, can you just see the top of that grand old red brick building poking up into the skyline over the houses to the left? You might need to get on your tiptoes. That's St Mary's College, New Oscott. They train students for priesthood there. Its origins lie in the mission of Andrew Bromwich, who, in 1679, became the last English priest to be tried for treason and condemned to death. At that little T-junction of paths beyond the benches, you need to turn left. As we head downhill to the road, we'll join Capilano Road. Which reminds me, did you know that German and Italian prisoners of war were held local to here? One was at Penn's Lane, if you know it. Well, they think some of them helped build the prefabs along Capilano Road. Italian labourers were shipped in too.
They had Italian road layers and builders come and help with the building, because there was, after the First World War, there was insufficient skilled people to do it, and a lot of them came over, and that is why Capilano is named Capilano, because that was where the majority of them had come from.
Where this path forks, keep left and exit Enderby Park at the junction with Jackdaw Road. You'll probably have noticed a lot of the new roads are named after birds and flowers. Look out for others during the rest of the trail. Once out of the park, turn left and then right onto Dovedale Road. There's a red plaque, number 8, on the left soon after the entrance to Dovedale Road. Watch out for the traffic when crossing these roads. Eight, Dovedale Road. Let's keep walking. During the demolition of the boot houses, the estate was like a bomb site. It was a very traumatic time for the community. Arthur Bolton tells us.
Dovedale Road was a whole road of concrete houses, and gradually the whole road became a ghost town. They were all boarded up houses. Of course, youngsters being lads what they are, only lads like, they want somewhere for a den. They want to break into one of the houses and light a fire in the fireplace and, you know, do what lads do. Unfortunately, a lot of them got deliberately set on fire.
Hell. One word for it, sheer hell it was. Our road was pretty empty by the time we moved, it was. But we stuck it out. We were burgled 3 times and people knew, must have known we went out dancing on a Saturday night.
Looking at these houses, now you just wouldn't believe it, would you? Arthur lived in one of the brick corner houses. He got a shock when they had a new roof.
Kids thought, oh, scaffolding's up to that house. It's an empty house. I was sitting there with the wife one night watching the television. They threw stones at the front of the windows. Of course, I jumped up, run out, and chased a whole gang of lads off. But that's what we were up against at that time.
And the fire engines, they must have been run off the feet, because they were always starting fires in all the houses.
The minute a house was boarded up originally with boards, they pounced. They took out all the electrical wiring, the copper pipes, if the toilet and the sink was fine, that went. And they took the pavement up and took that even. It was horrendous.
And then this one lady was coming out to a meeting one day. I remember her quite vividly. She's passed away now. But she came out and she seen somebody pull up in a car and dump all the rubbish. So she run back in and she said to her son, come here, they're dumping rubbish. So he said, I'll go and have them. She said, no, don't have them. Get in your car and we'll follow them. and they followed them back to Sutton Coldfield. Nice posh house, nice grounds. So they come back, they collected all the rubbish in the car, and they went back and dumped it on his drive and rung his doorbell and said, "You've left this in our area, now you keep it." And that was the end of that.
We need to cross over to Witten Lodge Road shortly. It's usually pretty busy, so let's pause the story until we are safely on the other side of Dovedale Road. Okay, now, where were we?
And then came the time then to demolish the houses. And we had black dust and we were all suffering from coughs. And we found out they were supposed to have dampened the properties down with a hose pipe to stop the dust. I mean, the dust was so bad. You know an explosion when they demolish a tower block of flats or a big chimney, you get all the dust, you can't see anything for several minutes. That's what it was like for every day. It was absolutely unbearable. And then the new houses started to build. Then we had the big lorries again bringing the sand and the cement and the bricks.
Throughout all the demolition in 2003, one of the boot houses remained inhabited by a resident for much longer than the council had planned for.
In Dovedale Road lived a man named Ernie. He got a big house. He'd done a lot to it. And they wanted him to move. And Ernie wouldn't move.
He couldn't get like for like, to start with. He'd extended his property quite a bit, and he'd got a big garage on the side, and he'd got a big aviary, and where they were offering him, he couldn't put a garage on the side and he couldn't have his aviary.
Keep on going past Kittywake Drive.
So he stuck out. He stuck out a long time. He was left there surrounded by nothing for, I'm sure it was a couple of years, if not more. And when we were having the final knockdown and we had this little party, his was still standing. And I can remember he went to the papers and said, "They never knocked the last house down because I'm still there."
Eventually, Ernie got what he wanted. He got a house in College Road.
We're almost at our next stop now. Martin's Way is first on the right. You see that blue plaque? That should be number 9. Plaque 9. Martin's Way. We'll just stop here for a moment. Over to the left is the recreation ground.
We had 3 football pitches on there, and every Sunday morning you could hear the roar of them and that, you know. And that's what it was all about. People came down and they'd come down with the kids and watch them play football, and then the teenagers would be playing football. And there'd be picnics on there. And it was really nice. I quite miss that, actually. I know it's noise, but it was nice noise, if you know what I mean. It was people enjoying themselves but not causing any damage.
On Dovedale Road in 1950, a stone with a hole in its middle was found. The experts reckon it's a mace head from the Stone Age. It's in Nietzsche's museum now. During the Second World War, a couple of planes crashed here too. The houses on the recreation ground are the final phase of the second Perry Common estate. The regeneration period has taken 25 years.
We split the estate up into different phases to make it more manageable, because it was just ridiculous to try and rehouse 900 plus people in one go.
Gail Lum worked for the council, a much loved housing officer who supported the residents from the day they got their letter to say their houses would be demolished.
I'd say to the residents, get involved. Don't sit back and worry, because worry breeds fear and it makes you fearful. And you might think, I've got nothing to offer, or you might think, I'm not educated well enough to sit in a meeting with solicitors and architects. Everybody's just a person at the end of the day, and your opinion's valid, and it's important because it's your future and the future of your children.
We'll head head at Martin's Way, which is named after Martin Knox, who was instrumental in forming Witton Lodge Community Association. The residents have had a say in all aspects of the development, you know. In a moment, we'll head up Kingfisher Road. Have a look at the double curbs to stop people parking on the grass. I certainly wouldn't want to try and park on that. This is the sort of input that the residents had in their development of their estate. Also, notice how narrow and curvy the road is. Try speeding down there. It's clever planning, soft and subtle, but it really makes a difference.
We knew there was speeding traffic problems because it was built really for a horse and cart, and we could see that they were going 60 miles an hour along the spine roads. So we said, why don't we just change the road layout? And you can do it in very subtle ways that are really annoying to car drivers. And to get from Sycamore Court to the shops in a car is torturous. But you can walk it in 30 seconds.
Our next stop is Sycamore Court, that tall building ahead of you. So, head around the left-hand side of the building and right onto Buxton Road. The 10th plaque is at the entrance to Sycamore Court. Plaque 10. Sycamore Court. This is a Witton Lodge Community Association Independent Living Centre. It opened in the year 2000.
When we were on the residence group, I knew Linda and Keith really well. But Keith had multiple sclerosis, and so I saw his health deteriorate, you know, as time went on. He was quite fit and relatively active when I first met him, and as time progressed, then he progressed to a wheelchair. But Keith was invaluable in building Sycamore Court, because Sycamore Court was built with the aim that anybody, whatever their need or disability, could be located into Sycamore Court. And Keith was very vocal about that, because he understood better than anybody else what it was like to have to try to manoeuvre up a curb, go through a doorway that was too small for his wheelchair, and just to feel different. He didn't want to feel different. He was just Keith. And we had design groups for Sycamore Court. We were all involved right from the first brick to the last brick, to the allocating, to the first resident moving in, to the last resident moving in. And Keith had lots of say in that, about the width of doorways, width of corridors, height of handles, height of handrails, resting places for people in the corridors who might not be able to walk great lengths. You name it, Keith had his name on it.
Now, double back on yourself. Head along the rest of Kingfisher Road and then onto the big roundabout known as the Ring on Witton Lodge Road. Just over to your left, on the other side of the road, you'll see the last of our plaques on the entrance to the ring. Safely cross over onto the ring, and you'll find out it's been a bone of contention in the past. Plaque 11, The Ring. Do you want to take a rest on those blue benches and we'll finish off our story?
Then of course we've got the ring, which there was no railings around that at the time, and we applied for some funding to put railings around there and was told we've got to have planning permission. Ha ha ha. They wanted money for that. So we asked around. One of the ladies who lives on the ring was playing on the ring as a 5-year-old when the railings was all there, and there was a brick building on there with toilets on. So we went back to the council and we said, there was railings on here before. I said, oh no, no, no. Yes, there was. They were taken around down for the war effort.
It was took for scrap. One of the other ladies that was on the committee said, I've got a photograph of me standing by it. So we brought it in to our architect and our clerk of works, and he took it with him to the planning office, and we got the railings. We had a lot of shops on the ring, mainly owned by the co-op. There was a vegetable shop, a grocer's, a butcher's, and then there was a hardware shop with an independent trader, and a little place that sold clothes, and one side of it was for ladies, one side was for gents.
It's the woodworking shop now on the corner there of the shops. It was a general store, Wilson's. And Mrs. Wilson came over the day we moved in. I can remember it as plain as can be. She bought a plastic washing bowl for the sink, £2 of sugar, a packet of tea, and said, welcome to Perry Common.
You could get everything on the ring. The milk and the bread was delivered by horse and cart. And you had your milk delivered and your bread. And you used to go out and feed the horse with carrots that you'd sneaked out the garden.
Perry Common Community Hall is just at the end of the row of shops, and the roots of community participation stretch back beyond the living memory of most people. Someone recently showed me a report in the Birmingham Gazette from 1931. It read, a community hall, the first of its kind in the kingdom, is to be built by Birmingham City Council as an experiment. It housed the Perry Common Occupational Centre for the Unemployed. They had all sorts of activities, weaving, carpentry, metalwork, boot repairing, toy making, you name it. Lectures were held there too. Today, it still serves the community.
A miracle has happened in Perry Common. It has. 90% of the houses are new. There's still a lot of old council houses left. But it is a miracle, a wonderful miracle it is. It is a changed neighbourhood now. There's all sorts of things going on. We have a lovely new community hall, which is also an office for the association. There's all sorts of things going on in there. And you can go in at any time in the hall and ask for information, sort out a problem. There's always someone there that's an expert in whatever you are going to ask for. And everybody is made welcome. Everybody. In fact, if you have to wait a little time to see someone, they say, would you like a cup of tea or a cup of coffee?
And that is our cue to do the same. I hope you enjoyed our brief step back in time to experience the rise, fall, and then rise again of Perry Common. It's been quite a journey. If you do fancy stretching your legs a bit more, then I recommend a visit to Witton Lakes. They were Birmingham's first reservoirs. There's a community orchard there too, and lots of wildlife to see and hear. But please remember to return any equipment you have borrowed to the community hall.